another episode of the American West Ham podcast. I'm your co-host Tony in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. On the other side, we have Brawley in St. Louis. How's it going, brother?
I'm doing very well, Tony. How are you on this fine day?
Well, I am doing fantastic. This is our first episode back after our amazing Rebecca Lowe interview, so props to you again for booking that.
Well, thank you. It was a little difficult to get her. I've tried multiple times to get her, and finally, like I said in the pod, I just hit her at the right time, and I got lucky, and thank you to Devin down at NBC for helping me set that up, because without the press secretary, I wouldn't have been able to do it, so shout out to Devin, who was the press secretary of Rebecca Lowe.
All right, so where can they find that interview if they need to go back and find it and listen?
Well, just go back wherever you're listening to this right now. Just go back one episode and listen to it. Or you can go on our podcast website and find it there. What's the link to the podcast website?
AmericanWestHamPodcast.com. So that's what I was trying to get you to say, but I guess we weren't on the same page there. Anyway, we do have a great episode for everyone tonight. We're going to touch the Norwich game. We're not going to do a full recap because that was about a week and a half ago at this time. We have the international break to briefly touch on, a great Q&A session, and then the Villa match next week, which would be on Monday.
Yeah, it'll be a Monday night football game. I'll actually get to watch it. Well, hopefully. I'm off almost every single Monday. My work doesn't schedule me on Mondays usually, so I should be able to go down to the pub and watch it. I don't know how many people will be off on a Monday, but I should be able to watch it, so I am excited for that. And I think many of the West Ham fans who live over there are excited to go back to Villa Park for the first time in a few years, because it seems to be one of the best away days in the country, if I am correct in understanding that. I haven't been myself. I've always wanted to go to Villa Park, but I've heard it's a great away day.
I have it on my list to do, but I have not been able to get over there for this one. But in the meantime, we will jump over to the Norwich game. What were your initial, or I should say, post-game thoughts after our 2-0 win on Saturday?
My main takeaway from that game was finally a team that we should be beating easily, not necessarily easily, I guess is, that would be the wrong word, but team that you should be beating. Pellegrini, what I found during the beginning of Pellegrini's era is that we struggle to take it to teams like that. We like sit back and we like to hit them on the break. Well, that game, we just took it to them for the whole second half. We just took it to them and took it to them. It was like finally a winning mentality of, hey, we should be beating the shit out of these guys, so let's just take it to them and don't worry about leaving guys exposed to the back. Let's press and push and push and push, because they're not going to be able to hit you back. So let's just take it to them. And we finally did that for once. It was like the first time I can honestly think like we just took it to a team for 90 minutes.
I'm going to agree with you there. And then the other thing I want to point out, that's 2 weeks in a row now. Not just one, because how many times last season did we have one great week and then, like you said, lose this winning mentality against poor sides and the big club mentality? This is 2 weeks in a row, and I'm going to disagree with you on Norwich. This is a team that we should be beating. This is absolutely a team we should be beating. It should be a guaranteed win, and they did it. Now,
I was saying easily. Easily was the word that I didn't want to say. You should be beating them, but the word that I didn't like myself using was easily. We should be beating them. I don't disagree with you there, but I don't think any Premier League game is an easy win, in my opinion. That's all. That was the point I was trying to make.
Well, point. Long story short, we beat them, and we beat Watford. The Brighton draw was we played poorly, but this is 2 weeks in a row that we've actually took it to them, and I'd like to see what we do against Villa. Again, another team that, in my opinion, I shouldn't say guaranteed win, you know, like you said, easy, you're right, but this is another team that we should be able to take 3 points off of, even on the road at Villa Park.
No, I agree with that. I think Villa are going to be a tough test, actually. I think at Aston Villa on national TV, I mean, they're going to be up for that game. I guarantee that. But it's a matter of if we can just stay composed and just take it to them and not just sit back and hit them on the break. I think I just want to see Pellegrini come with this attacking mentality and this winning mentality and just start beating these teams on a regular basis.
So who was your key performers for the Norwich game? Let's start with there.
Yeah, Anderson was my man of the match. I thought he was phenomenal. The best performance that he's put in a claret and blue shirt. And, you know, he finally just not afraid to take guys on and just run at them and do his little nutmegs and his little dribbles and just tear the other team open with just one pass. And he did it multiple times. I'm speechless right now. I don't know what to say. He was that good. I mean, he was incredible. And I loved to see him pissed off to be coming off the pitch and get substituted. I absolutely love to see that in a player. I want you to be pissed that you're coming off. I want you to stay out there and want to score goals. So just Felipe Anderson, 10 out of 10. He was phenomenal.
I think my key guy was Masuaku. That was two games, again, back to the Watford game. That was two games in a row that Masuaku, for me, has been our key player. And I would even argue the Brighton game, that he performed extremely well, even though we drew 1-1. Most of that game, I think you'll hear me talk about after on that podcast, that he had two runners on him almost the entire second half when I was at the game watching, because I was on his line, essentially, and saw him. So for him to absolutely break out the Watford game and then another clean sheet against Norwich, I'm absolutely stunned by his turnaround. I mean, when he broke through the defense and he was the one who slotted it across the back to Sebastian Haller for that goal. So I think he had an incredible performance, and I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. It's just a complete 360 from where I thought, I guess going back the last two seasons now, I thought Cresswell was the better wing back or the better outside back. Sure. And now he has turned that on his head completely, and he's actually getting better defensively, which is really my only concern with him. I just thought defensively he looked out of place on a regular basis. And now with us attacking as much as we are, it seems like he's not as exposed on the D as he normally was. So, and he's making good decisions defensively as well. I can remember him when he gets caught in a 50-50, like should I come or should I stay? But usually he would just back off and back off and back off, and then the guy just dances around him and then he's in. Whereas now he's firm in his decision making. He slides in there. He wins the ball, and then so I think defensively, that's where I've seen the biggest improvement from Masuaku.
Would you be willing to, because one of the talking points we talked about all summer was improving the outside backs. Would you still replace him, or if he keeps this current form, would you keep him?
I think we need a left back either way. I don't think he's going to – I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't think he's going to continue this good for the entire season.
Sure,
I hope he
so.
Proves me wrong, but – I wouldn't be opposed to getting rid of Cresswell and hopefully buying someone for competition. I don't think we should be happy with our left back or right back situation right now, like completely. I think you need to bring someone in for competition, and Cresswell, I think, is past it now. And I wouldn't be upset to see Cresswell move on to a championship club or something and then bring someone in his spot to at least push Masuaku for that starting spot.
Yeah, I agree there. The other thing about Masuaku is he did just sign that 4-year extension. So, not that that really means anything. That means it could just be a transfer move, but that's there. So my next question that I think we should discuss is about the Norwich game. Mark Noble, how important has he been coming back into the side?
I say it every week. It's when he's in the team, we win more games, and when he's not in the team, we lose more games. It's simple. And his leadership, his ability to break up the play and his ability to pass the ball is second to none. Mm-hmm. And every season, people second guess him, like, okay, this should be the year, including myself. I even think I said it this year, is this should be the year where we start phasing him out of the team on a regular basis. And we can see we're not ready for that because he has made the most difference to us when he's come back in the team. And we've been good ever since he's been back. So Mark Noble is the heartbeat to this team right now. And you can't drop him. You just can't.
No, absolutely not. So the other person that we need to talk about, obviously, because I think Mark Noble has been essential to this side, we lost Antonio in the Newport game, in the cup game. I think that was luckily we pushed forward, and the reason I brought Antonio up is because his right wing replacement, Yarmolenko, scored his goal this weekend.
It was good to see him back and good to see him scoring. It was awesome to see him celebrate with the medical team. I thought that was really, really, really special. And he could have scored right before that, too. He smashed the post. just probably a minute or 2 minutes before that. And up to that point, he was the worst player on the pitch by country mile, I thought. He was turning the ball over left, right, and center, not tracking back as well as I thought he should. But after he hit the post, he was really, really good. And you can't be so quick to write off players after a major injury. You can't. I mean, he's been out for almost a solid year. And for him to finally come back, you just have to give him time. And I think it was really – I was seeing on Twitter during the game, like, everyone was like, oh, he's terrible. Take him off, take him off, take him off. He's terrible. We should think about selling him now. I've seen people start to think about selling him. It's like you can't – after two games, after one and a half games, really, you can't just think about moving a guy on because – an Achilles injury, from what I understand, is one of the toughest injuries to come back from.
Well, look at Lanzini.
That's everything. Well, that was his ACL. Well,
right, but I'm saying that he was off on that time, and he's been inconsistent and now finally finding form as well.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, an Achilles injury is – that's everything. Your knees and your Achilles are everything. So when you can't trust yourself to sprint or lunge in for that tackle or shoot the shot at 100%, like, that's scary, and like it's and that could have been a career-ending injury, and popping and completely tearing your Achilles could be the end of your career. So I'm just so happy for him to get back on the score sheet, and I think he's going to be a vital player for us this season.
Yeah, I agree. Is there anybody else you want to talk about? I think the positive that we should also take away from this is that we're not really talking about the defense other than Masuaku's offensive performance. We don't need to talk about any major goalkeeper or defensive blunders where we're sitting here like, oh my days, we need to change somebody. I guess my last point I want to talk about this game with you is Ogbonna. And he played, I think, fairly well this weekend. What are your thoughts on Ogbonna taking Balbuena's spot?
Well, he's earned it now. I mean, it was questionable to begin with, but you can't argue with two wins on the bounce and then just a solid performance from him. Brighton, I didn't think he was very good, but the Watford and Norwich games, I thought he was superb. Issa Diop was even better in this game. But as of now, you can't drop Ogbonna. You have to keep Balbuena on the bench, and Augie takes his spot for the time being until they give him a reason to drop him. So I'm happy with Augie continuing to get the minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. So for our listeners, if anybody else wants a more in-depth point of view or analysis, you can go to our website, again, AmericanWestHamPodcast.com, and you can click the Danalytics page. And our friend Dan Roberts wrote a fantastic article with really cool graphics and pictures, percentages, stats about the Norwich game that does a really encompassing recap. So if you have time, go check that out. He worked really hard on it, and we really appreciate that as well. Any final thoughts on Norwich?
Nope, I think we should move on to the next part of the show.
Absolutely. So we're going to take a quick break and then go into Q&A.
And we are back, and now it's time to move into my favorite part of the podcast. It's questions from our followers on Twitter. The first one we have here is from AG Harris, and his Twitter handle is @TheRealHarrisIV. And his question is, can you guys talk about how hard it is to get away tickets? Also, do you think American pro teams will limit sales and segregate home and away fans? Also thought on this for the U.S. national team, I say it's about time we limit sales to away nations, i.e. Mexico. So there were kind of a bunch of questions wrapped up into one there. But first, just like talk about how hard it is for Americans to get away tickets for West Ham games.
Okay, so the thing about away tickets right now, especially with the climate, I'll just leave it at that, that's going around with the away tickets and some of the 10% ballot and stuff. I guess the only thing that for American fans really to do is hope that you A, know somebody, or B, you can find a spare on Twitter. It's really, really incredibly difficult to get away tickets. I even have trouble getting them sometimes. So for anybody who doesn't know, who's an American listener, because obviously I'm assuming if you're English listener, you probably understand. There's a point system. They call them loyalty points, which I think is the wrong name for it. But there's a priority point system, and the higher on the points you have by going to an away game, you get a point for every away game, and then it goes down the order. So if you have 35 points, you're the first one to buy.
So just to clarify.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just to clarify for anyone that might be confused. So you're saying you get a point for every single away game you go to, correct? That's 1 point. So if you go, let's say, to Manchester United away, you get 1 point for going to that game, right?
Yep, 1 point for Man United away, Sunderland away, Chelsea, any away game is 1 point.
So every game you get 1 point, and then you also get a point for the home cup games too, correct?
I believe it's 2 points now for home cup games.
Okay, interesting.
Yes, so which is very controversial as well. And I'm assuming, I can't confirm this, but I'm assuming if it was ever goes if we ever made it to a cup final, and the only reason I'm bringing it up is I'm praying to God we do this year, it'll go on priority points as well, like an away game. I can only assume that. So if we made a cup final, whoever has the highest points as a season ticket holder and goes down the pecking order there. The main argument that is going on right now is if you're at the top, it's easier to stay at the top. Because you can buy a point, I mean buy a ticket and get the points. I think it's a little controversial, so I'm gonna not really touch on that other than the fact that back to the original question for an American fan, it's really good to find a friend or find someone on Twitter that might be selling a ticket. My recommendation is probably if you're planning your trips, plan them for northern games. One, it's really fun to travel up the country. And two, you're more likely to get a game like Everton away, which is one of my favorites. Newcastle, Villa was tough. Now that we're back in, they're back into the Premier League, people need to get that game. But more so, games that don't seem great, plan your trips, and you can always find a worldie out of them occasionally, like our Stoke game. Brawley and I went to
True.
Stoke. We went up to Stoke, which was the Arnautovic game, and we won 3-0 and had a blast. I don't think Stoke is away is a big destination for people, but you and I had an absolute blast at that game.
Right. No, that's true. And it's as Tony was saying, for the big games, obviously it's going to be harder and harder to find a ticket for. So
Like Spurs away
you
or
can
Bournemouth.
try, yeah, or
Like a small
Bournemouth.
allocation.
Yeah, I got lucky. I got to do Spurs away and Bournemouth away, because Bournemouth Stadium's so small. So typically, for those that don't know, also in a Premier League stadium, the away team gets 10% of the entire stadium. Is that correct? Is I believe
It's
that's
capped at 3,000 or 10%, I believe.
okay, 3,000 or 10%.
Could
So
be wrong,
whichever.
but I know it's capped at 3,000 or whatever the percentage is smaller. For example, like Bournemouth's ground, they have 11,000 seats. 3,000 would be way over whatever percentage it is.
So yeah, you get 1,100 seats at Bournemouth, which is the smallest allocation in the Premier League. So that's why a game like that's going to be the hardest one to get to. And then
Or
your
Oxford in
cheap,
the cup, or Newport in the
yeah,
cup.
exactly. A ground, those tiny grounds are tough. And then your Spurs, your Chelseas, your Arsenals, the bigger games are going to be tougher to get your tickets to.
And for anybody who's wondering, I believe, again, could be wrong, but I believe that there's 700 away season ticket holders. So on top of that 3,000, you subtract 700 automatic ticket holders. I mean tickets and any bond holders who buy a ticket. So really, you're left with 2,300, 2,200, and people, 52,000 season ticket holders fighting for 2,000 tickets. So
Yeah,
that's why they have a point system. Whether it works for some, it doesn't work for others. And then my whole argument is if you change the system, it's going to work for some and not work for others. So
it is.
it's always going to be an issue. It's
Yeah.
just about pleasing people. And frankly, the club doesn't care. They sell their, and I don't think they care. They sell their 3,000 tickets regardless. So they don't
Yeah,
care if
doesn't
Joe
make a
Blow,
difference.
they don't care if Joe Blow on 42 points or if it goes to ballot and it goes to 1 point. So I don't think there's a really correct way of doing it. I think you're just going to piss people off and no one's going to be happy. I guess my only gripe is someone who's extremely upset that they couldn't get a Spurs ticket. But they don't go to any other games. Like, well, this is unfair. People at the top have all the points, and I can't go to Spurs. Well, brother, you didn't go to Everton, Newcastle, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, or any of those. So
Yeah,
I don't.
or any of the home cup games where you can get a ticket to or get points to as well.
Right.
And it's and that's why they initiated the 10% ballot thing, which pissed off a lot of people, is because so people that don't go to every game can have at least a chance in a lottery of going. So And the reason we're talking about this so in depth is because it is such a foreign concept over here. Like, if I want to go see my Blues play down in Nashville, I just buy a ticket. You sit with everyone in the home fans, and like, there's no segregation, so it's not an issue.
I'm trying to get you to the Blues Flyers game in Philly sometime.
Yeah, exactly. That'd
And
be great.
you and I would buy two tickets. You'd wear your Blues jersey. I'd wear my orange Flyers Simmons jersey, and we'd sit right next to each other.
Yeah.
So, the second part of that question was, do you think American pro teams will limit sales to segregate home and away fans? I think no. I think similar to West Ham selling their 3,000 tickets, I don't think the teams care who they sell tickets to. As long as it's sold out and they get their money, I don't think they care.
Yeah, until there's a police, a need for segregation, there will not be segregation in this country. As far, like I went to Sporting Kansas City away when we played them in the Cup, like 4 or 5 years ago, and we were segregated, but it wasn't like there was a line of police. Like we were all in one section, but it wasn't like there was a line of police separating us. So I think that's what you'll find here is until there's a need for segregation. Over here, you just won't get it. And I don't think the culture will ever be like that over here. It's just totally different.
And you have a few drunk fights, but nothing. It's a few drunk fights. It's not an actual tribal. I don't want to say like organized fighting, because in England, that's not what it is anymore. It's not organized fighting, but it might kick off a little bit in the stands. But in reality, I think American sports are. You might have the same passion, but less tribal. You might sit next to somebody, and there might be some banter, and you might cuss each other, but I don't think there's anything where people are really going to scrap and go to jail. And if they do fight, they're probably drunk.
Yeah, I
Typically.
agree. So, you want to move on to the next question?
The last part I do want to say quick about the USA Mexico. I was at the USA Mexico game in Columbus, where I think that the only segregation that they'll do is selling to direct American sections, like the American Outlaws, where they had like 11,000 tickets for that game for the World Cup qualifier. But other than that, again, I think USSF doesn't care, and they'll be happy to get people in the seats. It money talks, you know. That's where I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Next question. Cameron Durbin, which on Twitter is Cameron underscore Durbin, but not like your Durbin, because you're not actually Durbin. But anyway, do you think Allaire and Anderson is the next Hall & Oates?
So this is a question directed at me. This is my buddy Cameron, who I went to Vegas with. Hull and Oates, for those that don't know, were a very iconic duo that played for the St. Louis Blues back in the 90s. So
Which is hockey.
they were our dynamic duo. Yeah. So yes, I do think Allaire and Anderson are the next Hull and Oates. I think they're going to be the next big thing, and I love the Blues. Anytime I can squeeze in my Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues into a podcast, I'm going to do so because actually on Saturday the Stanley Cup made a visit to the St. Louis FC game, and we got to hang out with the Stanley Cup at the St. Louis FC game. Alexi Lalas was there,
Nice.
Tim Ream was there, who else was there?
I like Tim Ream.
Josh Sargent playing over at Werder Bremen for the US national team as well.
Mm-hmm.
He was there. He's from St. Louis. So it was very much an all-star cast at the St. Louis FC game, and it was really cool. The Stanley Cup was there, which was awesome. I think it's a lot of people's favorite experience they've ever gotten to see at a St. Louis FC game. So I just wanted to mention that. All right, the next question we have here is from Paul Wilson at Wilbur underscore 01. And he says, is moving Chicharito on the right thing to do? If Wilshere, and then the next part is, if Wilshere gets back to his best, should Pellegrini think about moving Declan Rice into the back four and playing Jack and Nobles together? And do we have any early recall on loan players? So that was a bunch of questions in one. Let's start with the first one. Chicharito leaving for Sevilla, is that the right move, yes or no?
I'm going to say yes. I liked Chicharito. I don't think we played to his strengths, and I think that was his biggest downfall. And I think that he has been very, very respectful and professional. Although someone did say, yeah, he feels like he's moaned every window. Yeah, I think he has said something every window that he kind of wants to leave or indicated. But at the same time, he went to training, moved on, and played and did his job. I want to refer to the poll that you put out 6 days ago. that says, how will you look back on Chicharito's time at West Ham? We had 762 votes, 25% positive, 9% negative, and 66% indifferent. So I'll let you go on your thoughts of Chicharito and your thoughts on the poll.
Yeah, so my thoughts are it was the right thing to do probably because he's been wanting to move for so long. And the thing is with him is he didn't go out into the press and like throw a fit about it and get his name out there to try to force a move. He respectfully handed in a transfer request late, which he hadn't had to do to this point. He really wanted to go, and I think he did it the right way, and I think everyone at West Ham should be thankful for his time that he had here. He scored some vital goals for us.
Chelsea and game.
He's the Huddersfield game. He single-handedly gained us 3 points out of that game, and Samir Nasri came on and helped that game. But I'm just saying, as a whole, I think we should look back positively on his time here, and he's a Rolls Royce of a player, so we have a team that isn't built for that. I think in the Man United and the Real Madrids, like, that's perfect for him because they get him the ball, square it to him on the floor in the area, and he scores. Ironically, I think Hernandez scores all three of the Allaire goals if he gets that service into the area as well. I think if he's in those positions with that kind of service, he scores all three of those. Now, Allaire may have run and tracked harder than Chicharito would have.
And much more aerial presence.
Yeah, that could be true. But overall, I think we should look back as a decent time with West Ham. Indifferent, I can get behind people thinking more or less like meh, like it was okay but not great. But definitely shouldn't be negative.
One thing that you made me think about when you were saying your comparison from Chicharito to Allaire, I think Allaire's finally the striker that we're looking for. And the only reason I'm bringing that up now is because it had me thinking. Allaire has the finishing and offensive capability that Chicharito has, but also the vital aerial game and hold-up play that I felt that Andy Carroll brought to the team. So right. I think finally we have that nice mix of in-between, and I believe that's why Allaire's A, been successful so far this season and will be for seasons to come, or at least I hope so.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. The next part of that question was, I lost my... Yeah, do you think Wilshere, if Rice should go back into a back four with and then move Wilshere in the midfield with Noble?
No, I don't think you mess up. I don't think you change. I think you stay the same again. I really think that Wilshere is a fantastic player when he's on it, but I don't think he's really been on it, and I think he's been niggling and injury to injury again. So do I think when he's back at his best? No. I think you need Mark Noble right now in that side still. I think you've had a changed mentality from that Brighton game. They didn't start well against Watford, but Mark Noble led the charge back and three unanswered goals there. And then again, the Norwich win, 2-0. Mark Noble played fantastic in those games. And even when he doesn't play well, he at least organizes the midfield, and people complain about his back passes, which has just been debunked a billion times now. So do I think that Jack Wilshere replaces Noble? No. Do I think Jack Wilshere replaces Rice by moving him into the back four? No. I think Declan Rice is now a CDM. I think the moment that you put him in the center back, he will move teams to where he will play in the central midfield. That is his bread and butter now.
I agree with that. I don't think I need to add a whole lot to this, to that question. I totally agree with you. And then the last part is, do we have any early recall on loan players? And I think briefly, my understanding from X is that we do have a recall option on Diangana, and we do have a recall option on Hugel. I think those would be the only two you'd probably consider it. But yes, we do have recall options available. Do you want to read off the next one?
Well, I want to ask you, would you recall any of them right now?
No, not right now. Definitely not. I think Diangana is going to be to get more out of his time at West Brom rather than coming off the bench for West Ham. And apparently he's tearing it up there. He's been playing great. And Hugel, I just don't think he's cut out for the Premier League. The only way you recall Hugel is if you can't buy a striker in January and he is your only option. But
yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I think Diangana will learn a lot of skills of playing, and I think it's an ability to play week to week and being able to perform week to week. So I think him rather than being in and out of the side of the first team at West Ham, and but being a starter at West Brom, I think that will benefit him in the long run rather than playing Premier League football at this time.
Agreed.
Yep. So I'll read the next one. That's from Grant TT Showbiz, and that is Generation G2 on Twitter. Aaron Long needs one more cap to qualify for a visa. Since he is on the roster for Uruguay and Mexico matches, and Cardoza apparently not ready for the senior squad, should West Ham go back in for him in January, assuming there is a reasonable price? What are your thoughts on Aaron Long? And then I kind of want you to address the Cardoso situation. Is there somewhere that says that he's not ready, or just he hasn't played?
Yeah, I don't know a lot about Aaron Long, as I've said in the past. And he's getting up there in age, apparently, too. So, I mean, I don't think we need another center back. I think Cardoso, he is very young and very raw, and I think that's the case with him, is he's just too raw right now. But I think eventually he can be good cover. No, I don't think we need to go in for him in January.
No, so Aaron Long, by the way, is 26. He will be. He will be 27.
He's my age. Yeah. Getting up there in age. He's my age. Jesus.
And he'll be 27. Wow. He'll be 27 in a month. Which, by the way, I had this conversation with another buddy of mine today. We were talking about NFL players, and I feel terrible when I'm talking about players who are like 30 and 31, and I'm like, that's really only 5 years older than I am. That's really not old at all. So
yeah.
But I'll answer the question as well. No, I don't think we need to go in for Aaron Long. I think he's played very well, and I'll give him a shout out there. But I'm not sure that he is A, Premier League quality or Premier League backup quality. And B, I haven't heard anything about Cardozo not being ready other than the fact that he just hasn't been playing. But with Diop and Ogbonna playing well, and then Balbuena being the next step, I really don't think he would be seeing much time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. The next one is from Scott Davis here at Denver West Ham, and he kind of touches on something we just talked about. If you could recall either Hugo or Diangana, who would you recall? And does the sale of Chicharito encourage you about the development of Zonda Silva? I'll start with this one.
Okay.
If I had to pick one, it would be Diangana, but I don't want to recall either of them. And does the sale of Chicharito encourage me about Silva? No, not really. I think Chicharito needed to go either way, and I think it shows that they're very, very, very confident in Allaire. I think that's what it shows you. And then they must be confident in Yeti as well if they're willing to let go of him, especially with Antonio injured.
Yeah, I don't – if I had to pick one, I'm recalling Hugo, just because I'd rather Diangana stay and get that experience. And then I guess the other one was, does the sale of Chicharito encourage Zander Silva? I think it does. But the other thing about Silva is he just posted on Instagram this week that it seemed like he was back in training, or at least running and working out. So I'm glad to see him back from injury.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. Dave Lapointe is the next one. Dave_Lapointe. Masuaku isn't really a left back, but seems in I don't even know that word there at this point. How much slack is he going to get in his own end before Cresswell or some other equally suspect players get some run? He says, happy Labor Day, boys. By the way, this Monday was Labor Day here in the United States, for those that didn't know that. So we didn't get to podcast on that Monday. We just recorded the Rebecca Lowe interview and put that out. So happy late Labor Day to you, Tony. But do you think I'm not really sure the point of Dave's question here. What do you take away from that question?
Well, I think the main thing that needs to be addressed in this question is Masuaku has been playing extremely well. I agree with Dave. I don't think he's really left back. I believe we said it on two pods ago, because the last pod, again, was the Rebecca Lowe from NBC Sports podcast.
Not a big deal.
Not a big deal at all. I think that Masuaku is too bad to play left back, but too good to start it. I mean, excuse me. He's too bad at defending to be a left back, but he's too poor at attacking to be a winger. Does that make sense? Like, I don't think he's exceptional at one of those positions. I think he's just a good utility player. But he's been playing extremely well the last 2 weeks, so I don't think we move him and or take him out of the starting lineup. And we kind of touched on it before. You think Cresswell leaves and we have somebody else come in.
Yeah. No, I don't have much to add to that. I pretty much agree with what you're saying there. Go ahead and read off the next one.
Yeah, pork steak schmuck. Do you think, are you starting to see Diop Ogbonna pairing begin to click? I think, but I'm still undecided. So
yeah,
do you think Ogbonna
I
and Diop are playing well together now? And then I think we also need to keep in mind our opponents were Watford and Norwich, who are both at the bottom. But again, we still need to get the job done, and they have.
I think I said this earlier in the show, but yes, I am very pleased with the way Ogbonna and Diop are pairing together. And I don't think you could change it at this point. And by the way, can I go off on a side little tangent here? Who the hell do Watford think they are? Like, I just don't understand them as a football club. You give the guy four games. It's your first manager to return for a second season. For those that don't know,
Watford
sacked Javi Gracia, their manager, yesterday, I think, and they replaced him 31 minutes later with their ex-manager, Kike Sanchez-Flores. So Sanchez-Flores is now the manager again at Watford, the guy who Gracia replaced, I believe. And I just don't understand their thinking. I don't think, like, why would you fire a manager, then bring in this new guy, he's good enough to carry you into the next season to get you to FA Cup final, you finish in the top 10, and then all of a sudden, after four games, you've got 1 point, and you decide to sack him. I just don't understand why Watford think I guess it's worked for them. I mean, they haven't gotten relegated, I guess, so who am I? But go ahead.
Yeah, so I have Watford's manager's Wikipedia page up here, and I just think it's absolutely incredible. So let's see, 2008.
Is it Sanchez Flores or Gracia?
Right now it's Kike Sanchez Flores, who just replaced Javi Gracia. But yeah, I mean, they've had a new manager in the calendar year 2019, 18, 17, 16, 15, yep. And 4, 3 in 2014. And 2013, 12, 11. So, I mean, since 2011 here, wow, Sean Dyche. I didn't know he was at Watford. But, yeah, I mean, we're looking at almost 10 managers in 5 years.
Okay, so the next question here is from my dad at Rustar40. Do you see a problem with the general? I sense a problem between him and the manager. Do you think there's some beef brewing between, Balbuena and Pellegrini?
Sorry, Papa Darvin, I'm going to disagree. I don't think so. I think Ogbonna has just outplayed him. I think Pellegrini made a decision, which I thought was a very questionable decision, to sit Balbuena and start Ogbonna. But it seemed to have worked the last two games, and I think he's just outplayed and earned to keep his spot. So I don't see a beef there. I just see that I wouldn't drop Ogbonna right now, which I'm shocked I'm even saying.
I do think there's a little bit of an issue going on, because I have heard from X, and I believe Sean Whetstone also said that they were not happy with his effort in preseason, and they haven't been pleased with his efforts in the big early part of the season as well. So I think he's probably unhappy that he's not playing, but I think him and the manager might not be getting on as well as we want him to. I don't think he's just happy to be sitting on the bench, but I don't purely think that it was because he's been outplayed by Ogbonna. I think Ogbonna's just exerted a little more effort, and they did say that, or X has said in the past, that they wanted that left-footed center back with a right-footed center back, and that's more of the reason why. But hopefully there's no drama there. I don't think it's like a big, big deal, but I think there might be a little bit of unhappiness with Pellegrini to Balbuena.
Yeah, I mean, even if it's probably minimal, like you said. I can't imagine. I'm sure if it was bigger, we would have heard of it by now, and it would have actually affected results. But it seems to not have affected results, and he's still been on the bench anyway. You know, if it was a bigger problem, he wouldn't have even made the 18. So the next question is Neil Jepson, and that's at NOGGS1. With 7 points from our first four games compared to a big fat donut from the last season, have you changed your opinions or where we will finish considering the improvement in the squad? Can we top crack six? I'm interested to know your thoughts here, because I think we may differ.
I have not changed my thoughts on where we're going to finish the season. I'm starting to come to the realization that Man United and Chelsea may be susceptible to dropping out of that top six. I'm still not ready to give it to us because I'm just not there yet, I don't think. I think if we show a little more consistency, I might get to that point. But for now, I'm pretty confident in my eighth spot prediction finish.
I think that we will push harder than I expected us to. I thought we've taken more points and we on games that we should have. I really just was pessimistic and really didn't think that we would get 6 points from our last two games. And I think it all depends on how we play against Villa and Man United. These next two games will be essential to showing what type of team we will be this season. Because if we fold against Villa, again, a team that I certainly think that we should beat. Obviously, you play the game, and okay, I'm agree with Brawley. Maybe I shouldn't say easy. But going to Villa, even if it's tough, this is I think we're a stronger team on paper, and if we get the job done and then put up a result against United, even if it's a loss but a strong game, I will change my opinion and say that we might be able to crack top six. But we really need to prove ourselves, and I don't want to get too excited after two games. I'm happy we won, but I think this team really needs to prove themselves against complacency.
Agreed. The next question here is from Stephen Humphrey at Central Stephen, and he says, solid shift from everyone. Really, really looked like the A team. Really hope Noble plays every game, if for nothing else than to show Rice how captaining is properly done. And love the new format music-wise. Thank you very much. And he also said, has a little P popped off, which by that point, he wasn't sold yet. And obviously now we know that Chicharito has been sold. So thank you for the compliment. Really appreciate it. I'm glad someone likes the music at the beginning and then our theme song at the end, because I think it adds a little more personality to our show, and we get to pick that. But go ahead and answer that question. Do you think it's good for Noble to play to show Declan Rice how captaining is done, or do you think that has any factor on the team whatsoever?
I don't think it really has an effect on Rice. I think it's good for him to see, but I think it's more important to see how Noble conducts himself at the training ground in team meetings. I think that is more about being a captain than what's actually on the field. I think on the field, the captain is important to get people going, but I don't think that's a big skill. Like, I think that it's more of a mentality, but more encompassing what they're doing off the field and how they conduct themselves around the team. So I think that's more important. The one thing I do want to say about them looking like a team is the way that they played in that Norwich game, even though it was 2-0, we pushed them so hard, and it could have easily been 4 or 5 if we would have finished chances.
Oh, yeah. Tim Krul stood on his head in the second half, too. He made some crazy saves.
Like that header on Lanzini. And we hit the post as well. So I genuinely think that game could have been a much more higher score line that looked more like a team performance. And I thought they played extremely well. So again, like I said with the last question, I really hope it carries over. What are your thoughts on Noble Rice dynamic? Do you think what's your opinion there?
Yeah, I don't differ from you hardly at all. I'm sorry. I know it's better podcasting for us to disagree. I just don't really, I don't see, I don't see it affecting Declan Rice on if Noble plays alongside him every game. I think you're exactly right. On the training ground is where it needs to be shown. And then during the games, he'll do his thing. And I have every faith in the world that he's going to be a good captain someday. But I don't disagree with, like, I don't think it's a bad thing them playing together.
Right.
I just don't think that just because they're playing together, that means Declan Rice is going to become a better captain versus not when he's Noble's not playing, if that makes sense.
I don't know how long we're I'm not from our listeners. I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but I'm almost getting bored with the Rice captain thing, because he's not going to be captain this season. Let's just call it what it is. The kid's still 20 years old. He's not going to be captain this season. I think we've seen Ogbonna wear the armband. We've seen Cresswell wear the armband. So clearly not Declan Rice is not going to be captain this season. So, and then the other thing is, next 2 or 3 seasons, if he's still here, then maybe we can start talking. I guess the other thing I wanted to bring up on Declan Rice is I wish people would stop freaking out, though, about his comments about Manchester United. I mean, let's call it what it is. Manchester United's a much bigger club than West Ham. More financially, more bigger fan base, not a bigger ground. I don't think.
They are still a bigger ground.
Still a bigger ground. Okay. Yeah. Point is, Manchester United encompassing is a much bigger club than West Ham.
Well, and he never said that, like, he was going to there. He was just saying, he said at the end of his quote that he hopes to be a West Ham legend someday. So,
right.
He didn't say he was leaving. Excuse me. He didn't say he was leaving or anything. So I think that has blown over, and that ship has sailed, hopefully.
Yeah, I don't even want to give it too much legs, but I just want to point out my disgust that people just took that the wrong way. I didn't think it was that hard to take at all. He said that anybody would want to play for a big club like Manchester United, but at the same time, he's happy at West Ham. So you really can't complain.
Okay, the next question is from Ed Hughes at EdHughes123, and he says, now that Hernandez is gone, that leaves us with Allaire, unproven Ayeti, and injured Antonio, and still recuperating an unproven Zander Silva. Think that leaves us way too thin. Odds are, now that Hernandez leaves, Haller gets injured. It's the West Ham way. So, do you think we're now too exposed at the striker position?
Oh, goodness me. I think we are exposed, but I'm not worrying. I think Haller looks like a stud, and I really hope he doesn't get injured, knock on wood. But, Ayeti's unproven. We don't have really much else. Again, like he said, Silva is coming back from injury, and Antonio is now injured. I think we're a little bit light, because the other thing is, if let's just say Ayeti gets injured and Allaire's still fit, you know. I think we could improve and get somebody in January. I just hope that we can hold off and stay healthy until January. We're gonna need somebody because Antonio's gonna be out for what, 5-6 months probably.
I think it's a little less than that, but yeah, around three. I think I heard 3 to 4 months.
Well, okay, let's say September. So September, October, November, December.
It's for, a new year.
It's going to be January when we need to bring somebody in, because he's not going to come in fit. You know, he'll start training in 5 months. So we'll see. So long story short, I think we do need somebody. What are your thoughts? Are we okay, or do we need somebody?
I think it's not ideal, but you had to do it. If otherwise, he was going to start to throw a fit, I think. And I think he'd waited his turn so long to go. So, like I said earlier, I think it was the right move, and I think we'll be fine until January. I really hope so, anyway.
Yeah. And then I guess the last question we have here is that I put out. It's more a comment, but discussion point. I saw somebody on one of the American Hammers Facebook or American West. There's a whole bunch of American Hammers pages. But on the page, somebody bought a Hernandez jersey, and then he left. And they bought another jersey, and they got injured, a Yarmolenko jersey, and he got injured last year. So I was told the guy to stop buying jerseys with names on it. So I put out a poll. I said, when you buy a football or soccer jersey, or top, as they would say, because I'm probably going to get slated for saying jersey, are you a name or no name kind of guy? So I want to know what your thoughts, and then I'll read the poll out.
Yeah, like the older I get now, I'm finding it more and more uncomfortable to buy a kit with a name on the back of it, like a player. So like my last kit that I got with a player's name on the back, I think was James Collins. I think that was the last one I did. I used to, like, recently in the last couple of years, I've just started buying them blank. As I get older, I'm finding it just more and more uncomfortable to get someone's name on the back of the jersey. And I won't say I won't do it ever again, but I'll probably be more selective. Like, I'll probably get another Noble one, honestly. I'll never get my name put on the back of it, I don't think. But I don't judge people. Like, some people think it's just cringe if an adult is wearing a player's shirt, and I'm not in that camp. I think you should do what you want. It doesn't matter. But that's more or less my views on it.
So I'm with you on the no names. But I think I have two players' jerseys names. One I have my name on the back when I got one in high school. And then the other one I have with a name on the back I also got in high school was an old Celtic Nakamura jersey. So those are the only two, I believe, that I have names on it. But American jerseys I do, because that's very American. I have a Wayne Simmons hockey jersey. I have a DeSean Jackson and a Brian Westbrook Eagles jersey. So American sports, it's acceptable. English sports, I typically go no name on my jerseys. Yeah, man. So that was our last question on our Twitter that we put out and from our Twitter users. So let's talk about the amazing thing you did this week that I guess I found out that anybody can do, but it was still absolutely incredible. So talk about FanZone for me.
Yeah, so for those that don't know, on September the 4th, which would have been last Wednesday, I was invited to go on FanZone, which for those that also don't know is a international show, Premier League produced show, and basically they have Skype callers call in from all over the world, fans from all over the world talk about whatever topics they're talking about that day. So this week I've been talking to a guy back and forth about, he's been trying to get me on for a while now, and he said, I have James Collins coming on this week, would you be interested? And this was at like 3 in the morning. And for some reason, I woke up and I replied to it. And he said, do you want to come on this morning? We're looking for American West Ham fans to come on with James Collins, and you can ask him a question and chat to him for a little bit. I said, yeah, that's great. I was actually off work for the day.
Yeah, so did he give you a chance to – did he, like, put any restrictions on it? Or did you get to pretty much just off the cuff ask whatever you want?
No, I got to ask pretty much whatever I want, and it was, they didn't need to know the question beforehand. They were like, just have a question ready and you can ask it. And so, yeah, I went on. I was at the very beginning of the show, and if you want to find the show, guys, by the way, you need an NBC Gold subscription, which most of you should have if you live here in the United States, and just go back to replays and filter the Premier League only selection, and scroll down September 4th and pick out FanZone. It's a 30-minute episode. James Collins is on the whole episode. They talk to 3 or 4 West Ham fans, a couple of Villa fans, and then a couple of top six teams because they had some conversations about the top six.
Right, so we couldn't rip the audio. So could you go into – can you tell us about your interaction with James Collins? Because that's absolutely incredible. I was a little jealous. I was in a meeting, so I couldn't do it either.
Yeah, basically they brought me in – and I'm trying to remember what the first thing we talked about was. Oh, I know what it was. they were talking about Collins was talking about Mark Noble, the caller before me. And they come to me and they say, speaking of Mark Noble, and as you can see behind me, or normally I have jerseys hung up all behind me. And I had that set up behind me. I had a James Collins shirt hung up behind me, and then I also had a Mark Noble shirt hung up right behind me, and it was perfect. They loved that because it tied right into the conversation they were having. And he said, I could see you have a James Collins shirt over your right shoulder, but if you just lean to your left, and I leaned over, and you could see Mark Noble behind me, and they loved it. We talked about that for a minute, how Mark Noble's an absolute legend, how Ginge is an absolute legend, and
then the Bournemouth game.
Yeah, and Ginge basically said thank you for, because I just called him a legend and he liked that. And then my question was I think the host thought it was really random and really like stretching his memory and like kind of out there. But as you guys know, we talked to Bobby Madley on this show, the referee. I wanted, and ironically enough, I wanted to talk about that because James Collins' last goal he ever scored for West Ham was that game when I was there. So I wanted to bring that up and talk about the decision at the end of the game. Basically, he said it was madness. He'd never seen anything like it. And the presenter, like, I think it caught him off guard that Ginge actually, like, enjoyed talking about this question because it sticks out in his head so much. So it was really cool. Then I got to talk about the current situation at West Ham and how exciting everything is, and basically just talk to Ginge about how good everything is at the moment and how awesome everything is going at the moment. And just, it was an awesome, awesome experience. And I am just so over the moon about it. I got to show my dad, and I didn't tell my dad that I was doing it. And he thought that was awesome. So it was just really cool, that a really cool experience. And, if you do want to go on FanZone, guys, I can put you in touch with someone that can get you on the show. They are looking for American West Ham fans and fans of West Ham all over the world, not just American. So, if you want to know who to get in touch with to go potentially go on that show, just contact one of us and I'll put you in touch with the guy. And like I said, they're just looking for more people to go on every day. So,
yeah, and you don't need to be any special presenter or podcast person or media person. They'll just take anybody, right?
I believe so. That's what it seemed like to me. On my show, they had a guy from South Africa, and then me, and then a guy from Nigeria came on, and then I think maybe another American fan. I didn't watch that far, but there may have been another fan or two after me, and I just didn't get to stay on the call that long. But anyway, let's enough of talking about me. Let's go into the Aston Villa game and what kind of our thoughts are going into the game. It is a Monday night game, Monday Night Football under the lights at Villa Park. And what are you kind of expecting for this game?
I'm expecting a win. I'm just going to be flat out and say I'm expecting a win, and I will be disappointed if we do not get one. I think Villa has been up and down. They see themselves in 18th place. They've scored only 4 goals in 4 matches. They had a big win against Everton at home for them, and they were leading Spurs for a majority of their game until their new player Dumbele scored, and then Kane scored a double. But in reality, I don't think that they've really been all that good, and they're going to be missing one of their new midfielders, Trezeguet. I don't know how to actually pronounce that. He's from Egypt, but he got a second yellow in the 54th minute against their Palace game, so he will be out for our game. Either way, I do expect a win. I think that we're a better team on paper, even though I slated Tyrone Mings and Villa for that signing. I thought 20 million for him was crazy. He has played very well, and I believe you said he found himself in the England side.
Yeah, he got called up for England in this past call-ups. Yep.
Yep, but I still think that we're the better team, and I think they'll be missing a key midfielder who played in all 4 games for them. So I expect a win.
I disagree with you in the fact that they haven't looked very good at the beginning of the season, because I think where they are on the table is not indicative of how they've actually played. You did say against Spurs they played very well for the first 75 minutes of that game. And they got absolutely robbed at Palace, so they should actually have one more point than they have. I also expect to win, but I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk. And honestly, ooh, I don't know how good I feel about saying this, is I would probably take a draw if it was offered to me today, just because I do think a point on the road against any Premier League team is a good point. Now, if we want to start being that bigger and better team with that winning mentality, we do need to win these away games. But I would be tempted to take a draw at this point, because I do think Villa are going to be absolutely up for it playing on Sky live on Monday night. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, they played on Sky against Spurs and against Everton, but I think we should win this game, and I agree with you. If we want to be that big club mentality, this is a must win. And starting on 10 points, when I was looking at the table, I mean, come on. That would be absolutely massive for us. 10 points would put us up there. Obviously, there would be other games, but we're ahead of Manchester United and Spurs. I know it's 4 games in, and I don't want to get too excited, but
Yeah.
we got to win these games and lose the games that we should lose. If we win, I'm not saying we're going to win every game, so please don't even start on that route. But if we beat the Norwiches, the Sheffields, the Wolves, the Villas, the Watfords, the Bournemouths, all those teams, we're not as pressed against Manchester United, Spurs, City, Liverpool, Chelsea. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And the last 5 matchups that we've had with Villa, we've got 2 wins, 2 draws, and 1 loss. Our 2 wins came back on February 2nd of 2016, where we beat them 2-0. I believe that was the year they got relegated. And then back in February 8th of 2014, we also beat them 2-0. We've had a scoreless draw and a 1-1 draw, and then we lost 1-0 back in 2015. So the stats are in our favor, I think, but it's going to be a tough matchup. I think tougher than what you're thinking.
So give me a score prediction for our buddy Scott, who's going to be there.
Yeah, Scott, have a good time at the game. I'm jealous that you're there. If I had to go with the score, oh God, I want to predict a win. I will predict a win, I guess. I'm gonna go 3-1. I think it'll be a tight opening first half. And then I think we're going to take it to them in the second half. So I'll go 3-1.
I'm going to go 2-0 again. Back-to-back 2-0 games. I think that the defense holds strong. I think that our midfield will solidify, and we really showed this game that we are a top team and that we want to be a top team. So can you do the normal stuff that we normally do at the end of every podcast? Because I always mess it up. Hit us with all the stats.
So you can follow us on Twitter at West Ham Pod USA. You can send us an email if you like with some feedback to AmericanWestHamPod@gmail.com. You can also check us out on our new website, www.AmericanWestHamPodcast.com. And please, guys, go on to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and write us a nice little review. That really helps us in the charts, and we want to be as high up as we can and get as many people's ears as possible. So I believe that's it for the week. Tony signing off in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Brawley over in St. Louis, Missouri. And we will see you guys next week. After now, we got to decide on this, Tony. I guess on air we can do this. Do we record Monday night after the West Ham game, or do we record? Go ahead.
I sure hope so. We'll do this Monday night after the West Ham game. So expect the podcast to be on Tuesday.
Yeah, Tuesday morning. So don't get upset when we're not out on Monday, please, because we want to record after the game so we can talk about it. So Tuesday morning pod. That's it for the week, guys. Signing off. See ya.
Hey, have a good one. Come on, New Lions.
Just a fun West Ham back to the Premier League. Now this is more than a hobby. Give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me. Shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate. I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on, you Irons. It's time, throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow. Iconic bowling ground at London Stadium now. Blowing bubbles from the crowd. Let the Premier League know. The Irons going for the goal. Scoring 100 plus goals like Paulo Di Canio. So kick it off at the homies, known as Brawley and Tony, and keep on blowing those bubbles until they bring us a trophy. I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, and I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles. Hey, I believe it, I know that we're winning. I've been here since the very beginning. Yeah. Dreaming of the gold medal, we're lifting. Set it up like we're penalty kicking. 57,000 people packed. Hear the fans shout from the back. Take the ball and then we all attack. Make opponents feel the hammer crack. Wild nights, highlight stats. Tony got you covered on that. Brawley got the stories and the facts. Together everything is down packed. 3-time gold winners, but now it's time to get another cup. West Ham fans stand up. West Ham fans stand up. I'm forever blowing bubbles. And my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West West Ham Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. Said I'm forever blowing bubbles. And my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles. Hey.
Big wins, big games, big moments, big rewards. Absolutely. Disappointment. All season, promotion demanded by West Ham. On a sunny afternoon in May at Wembley, promotion to the Premier League has been delivered. Ricardo Vassey, one of the January arrivals, with the biggest goal he will have ever scored. And West Ham, Wembley winners again for the first time since 1980, but more significantly, back in the Premier League.